Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some big people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyslip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Fellow de Borghese.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Blackhead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Still warm down here in Florida.
It sure is.
Perhaps.
Yeah, I talked to somebody today, actually. I was in the dentist office, and just people were just talking. I don't know why, but they just sit next to me, and they go, oh, so, you know. But anyway, she said she was from North Carolina in the mountains, and when they left there, I guess it was last week or something, it was like 59 degrees.
And wow.
Oh, man. You know, Why are you leaving now? This is like the perfect time to be up there. And the highs are like in the mid low 70s, you know, that kind of thing. And oh man, I could go up there in a heartbeat. I mean, 10-hour heartbeat, but yeah, I could go up there.
well, my daughter lives in Ogden, Utah, and Ogden, Utah, and she said that it's been pretty warm out there. You know, it's getting up into low 90s and stuff like that. And I was talking to her last night, and she said that today's supposed to hit in mid upper 80s as a high. Tomorrow the high is supposed to be like 62. Yeah, I mean, it's just like whoom. It's got a front coming down, and that's it. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know. Mm. So,
she said everybody's looking. Does it continue that trend from now on? You know.
Yeah, until spring. I don't know. You know, they may get a warm front coming in, but everything's warmer. You know, so
yeah.
I played golf this morning, and oh my gosh, it was hot out there. I mean, just like humidity and heat, and it was really uncomfortable hot. No, just a very small breeze, which really wasn't enough to alleviate the heat. But it was still fun playing golf, though. Don't get me wrong, I enjoy playing golf.
Yeah, it could be, except for thunderstorms and, you know, lightning and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a fun time.
Otherwise, it is.
I know you have a You have some. I know you like to talk about this topic, but did you know that Angelina Jolie filed for divorce from Brad Pitt? I know you're really interested.
Did she really? Wow. Wow.
Someone told me to mention them.
You probably saw my post.
I have to mention this during the show because you love to talk about Angelina and Brad Pitt.
I have to follow up on. I wrote a post on Facebook saying, "A whole day has passed. The Earth is still rotating. The sky didn't fall in. The sun didn't explode. So we really don't care if they got a divorce, you know." So, but so Mike has to come back and wow,
that's big
news. Getting a divorce. So that means that she's available then, I guess, you know?
I guess. Not officially. I don't know. But,
yeah,
you know,
if
whatever.
You want six kids immediately.
Yeah, good luck.
Let's
see. So we can,
my
wife, we can spend
tonight,
the whole hour. Yes.
What's that?
Zinfandel? A Zinfandel?
Yeah. Okay. It is. It is the Federalist. That's the name of the winery, actually. It's made in the United States of America, the Federalist. It's in Lodi. It's a Zinfandel 2014 vintage. Our delicious and daring Zinfandel is worthy of the big, bold grape from which it comes. Then on the back it says, the Federalist Zinfandel. First President of the United States, General of the Continental Army, Father of our country. It's no overstatement to say that George Washington is a downright legend. All this makes George the perfect founding father to represent the Federalist Zinfandel. And there's a picture of George on the front of the bottle, too, by the way. It looks like the same picture as on the dollar bill. Sourced from the moderate Mediterranean climate of the Lodi Appellation with big, bold flavors of blackberry and plum, it's a true homage to the man himself. 12.5% alcohol by volume, 2014. It's good. It really is. It's got some good aromas to it. It's got the classic Zinfandel aroma, a little bit of chocolatey aroma, and a lot of fruitiness to it. I like Zinfandels anyway, so whenever I start waxing poetic about wine, Zinfandel is usually one of them that's right in there. So, but pleasant. But the Federalist, it was reasonably priced too. I think it was, you know, around $15 or something like that. Yeah. So, engineer just ran up to me like she's going to say something. And okay. So, I don't know if I talked about. What did I say? Didn't I say one? No, I thought I said one. Yeah, it looks like the picture on the $1 bill. It really does, too. Look at that. She just mentioned, she dug out a $1 bill, and the picture looks exactly the same. I wonder if the federal government's going to sue them for that now. No. is the images on money copyrighted?
Oh, wow, that does look. I'm looking at the images on the site there. That does look like the.
It's exactly, yeah.
Like an exact copy of it. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
It said 2013 on it.
The images of the on the money, is that copyrighted?
Can
we just use it? Is it usable for anything that we want off of money? I don't know. I never thought about it before until just now, and then I saw the
stuff.
But that is the picture from the $1 bill. Yeah.
And they have another one with who was that, Jackson, or on the? That's another estate-grown Dry Creek Valley, the Federalist Visionary. That has a different president on it, but there's another.
Looks like money again.
It looks like another money image. I can't remember.
Wow.
That's not Jackson. Who is that? That's, I don't know, one of them. Let's cold call him and find out.
We should. It's 7 here, so it still opens 4 later. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah. We should. Hello. You're on the air. You're live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope you can. Answer this question.
Yes. Answer the phone and answer this question. Is that copied from Mutton? No. They'll go, who is this really now?
Yes.
Yeah. No, we're not the government. We just want to know. I don't know if I read that. I saw this on my emails. I was going through my All About Wine emails. And thanks, by the way, of those of you who sent me emails. There's a few in there. I need to get on top of a few of them. I don't know if I talked about this one or not, but this is this headline here says, Israel aims to recreate wine that Jesus and King David drank. Now, I don't know if I talked about that. I'm thinking maybe
yes.
I did, but I don't. Did I?
Yeah, I'm trying to do a search here. King David? I don't know if I have those words,
yeah.
But I remember
Jesus
a talk
King
that
David. Yeah, I've been talking about Israel wines every once in a while, just, you know, because I find interesting articles on it and all that. But I don't remember this particular article. But it's just basically it says the some of the whites coming from Israel are grapes that were planted and used 1,800 years ago, which... Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. I don't know. It's indigenous grapes of the area. And they're thinking that it is the same type of grapes and the same type of wines that were around during Jesus' time. But I don't know. I think maybe I did, though. And that's why I was saying.
The only note I have is Israeli wine industry looking at the grapes from Israel, finding ancient grapes that are able to grow there. Recanati Winery? I don't know what that was.
No, this is where is this? This is I just saw the winery here. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but you know, they're talking about copper mines that date back to King Solomon's era in the 10th century BC, and the residue left after winemaking. It just, you know, different things on this article here that was telling about it, and I thought it was really interesting that in. You know, just they don't know for sure, but they're saying that the shores along the Sea of Galilee and the foothills around Jerusalem and the specimens that they have and stuff like that, it is producing good wine grapes, and they're getting good sugar body structure, a nice balance of acid and color. So it just... where is this winery? This winery, oh, there it is. It's Sorek Winery, which is located down in Israel, and south of Tel Aviv, and then also Recanati Winery, which is located north of Tel Aviv. These are... let's see, 2011, 120 unique grape varieties whose DNA profiles are distinct from all imports. And around 50 of them are domesticated, and they say they make, 20 of them are suitable for wine production. And by looking at the areas and what they're finding, they really think it's the same wines that were made, or same grapes that were made into wine in Jesus' time. So, just, you know, interesting little article there. I wanted to, I didn't know if I talked about it or not, but if I did, then a little bit more, and if I didn't, then, you know, a little bit of information on it there. So there you go. Here's an article I saw that I thought was interesting. Can wine... before bedtime, help you lose weight. Yeah, well, okay, come on, come up. This is not coming up here, and it's supposed to come up here. I was reading this before, and I saved this so that I'd be just pull it up and read it to you. While that's coming up, I got a few little bits and pieces. Trelarto Wines welcome Feudal San Gregorio to this portfolio. Lake Bluff, Illinois-based Trelarto, T-E-R-L-A-T-O Wines, announced a long-term partnership to import wines from Italy, a winery in Campania that is called Feudal San Gregorio. And they're saying it's a great partnership. Quality has always come first for both wineries. They're pleased to add them to their portfolio of Italian wines. They will import 8 estate wines from Italy. They're excited about working with the company, which is noted for their quality and its great portfolio. So if you're in Illinois, you're going to start seeing wines from the Feudal San Gregorio wine being available for sale around that area. Oh, here we go. We got the article that took more than forever to come up. It says, the claims that drinking at bedtime can help you drop a few pounds. It just generated lots of buzz around the area. And Snoops decided to investigate it. I read an article the other day, too, that Snoops doesn't really investigate their wine, or their claims as much as people think they do. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's somebody trying to get you to turn on to another investigative part. Turns out the majority of the coverage was referring to a Daily Mail story that hinged on the accounts of women claiming that their nighttime drink of wine helped them slim down. But there is no report, no groundbreaking studies or anything about the secret of a weight loss with wine. It's all been basically manager in the background says it doesn't work. She's been trying for years and found that it doesn't help. So, metabolic advantage of consuming wine in the wee hours really is insignificant. They said if you're going to try to do anything with it, it should be at lunch or dinner or not as a late night snack. It does contain calories, and it really doesn't cause you to lose weight just drinking a glass of wine before bed. It has lower risk of overweight women over 13 years than women who didn't drink at all. So, yeah, they did a long-term study, and the long-term study is showing that it doesn't help. So, if you've heard that, a glass of wine before bed will not burn weight or burn calories, which will not cause you to lose weight. That's not to say that you can't have a glass of wine before bed, because, hey, a lot of people do it to sleep, and it does help them. How many of you have heard the old thing, Grandma always had a glass of port before she went to bed? Because it always helped her sleep. So that's really, the thing. It probably will help you sleep, but as far as losing weight, it's not going to happen. I'm sorry about that. Got something here I want to talk about that I talked about last week. I was talking about the online. Let's see, is this the article? No, wait a minute, where am I? No. Is this the right? Oh, no, this is something else. I clicked on the wrong one here. Here's the one I want. Okay. I talked last week about the free wine course, online wine course. It was in the Decanter magazine, and talked about a free online wine course that you can get. All you need to do is sign up for it, and it will give you all the information. You can just take the course and all that. Expand your knowledge. If you want a certificate to show that you took the course, it is $50 for the certificate. It gives you an actual certificate so you can hang it up in your office or at the winery or wherever you want to hang it up. But I went online. I checked that out. And it's cool. It's a good site. It has lots and lots of courses. It's not just the wine course. It has dozens and dozens of different courses that you. I mean, I say dozens and dozens and dozens of different courses you can take, ranging all over the place on different ones that you can do. A lot of them are free. All of them do offer a certificate when you're done that you completed the course. It is $50 for the certificate, and that is, you know, it shows that you've completed the course. They have a variety of different things. If you just want wine, they have a nice, I saw a couple of different ones for wine in there, but just about anything that you want and that you might be interested in, there are courses in there. I thought it was really cool. I signed up for it. I get emails popping up every couple of days or something like that. And then most of the time, I just click out of them. I don't even look at them and don't open them and don't mess with them. Excuse me, because, you know, it's just a wine course. I haven't taken the wine course yet. I will, and just for fun, I'm... we'll probably spend the $50 and get the certificate so I can have the certificate just to show that I completed just for fun. But check it out. It is well worth it. I think I put a link on the one. Didn't I? Hang on. Let me ask my engineer here. Didn't I? I put a link on both the Facebook page and on the other page. So you can go and check those out on those pages there. I'm sure that they are still there. If they're not, Facebook, just scroll down a little bit. But check it out. It's a pretty cool thing there. And actually, it's free. So how often can you sign up for stuff like that that is free? And the answer is not often. So Delicato, ASG, Delicato Family Vineyards in Napa, which is big. I mean, Delicato is so big. Delicato has announced a new partnership with ASC Fine Wines. It's a distributor of imported wines from mainland China, Hong Kong, and Macau. ASC Fine Wines has exclusive distribution rights to a select portfolio of Delicato wines, including Gnarly Head, Delicato Family Vineyards, and Irony. Delicato Family Vineyards is a big vineyard, and ASC Fine Wines is thrilled, they say, to have them as part of their family. The ASC Fine Wines is the leading wine importer into China for the last 20 years, and they are looking at expanding the market even more with the new wines and are thrilled to have them as part of the wine family, which, you know, is what they always say. But Delicato is large. Got a new wine out, and something for you environmentalists out there. Rod and Rifle Wines. Prestige Imports in Mount Clemens, Michigan. It's national distribution, and the internet is prestigeimportsllc.com. Excuse me. So if you want to check out the website, but they have introduced new rod and rifle wines. They say these are created to be crafted to be paired with wild game. Retailing for about $8 a bottle. They're available in three varieties. Rod and Rifle Red Merlot, which is Sangiovese features. This is this velvety tannins, lust fruit, offers aromas of black currant, blackberry, and notes of toasted oak, followed by flavors of black cherry, ripe plum, and herbs with a hint of spice in the finish. So you open it up with some wild game, and the wild game's just going to take over all those subtle little things, and you're not going to taste it, but it's still fun to have the wine with your wild game. don't get me wrong. Both my brother-in-laws and hunt and all that, and I've had wild game, you know, off and on throughout my life with them, and it's good, but having wine with it sometimes will get it lost. Rod and Rifle Rosé of Syrah offers notes of strawberry and cherry on the nose with flavors of watermelon, leading to a dry raspberry finish. And Rod and Rifle White Chardonnay shows zesty lemon fruit flavors with hints of white peach, the company says. Proceeds from the wine line will benefit local, state, and national hunting and fishing conservation groups. So there you go. If you want to help conservation groups and enjoy some interesting wines here, Rod and Rifle being distributed throughout the United States. As far as I know now, this is in this month's Beverage Industry Magazine, and so as far as I know now, it's being distributed nationally. And in search of fine wine, this is also out of Beverage Industry, California accounts for 90% of the total U.S. wine production, according to the Wine Institute. Wow. Reveling in consumers' fascination with both wine and celebrity, wine experts Nick Wise and Linda Sunshine take readers on a journey to the Golden State and the vineyards of the rich and famous, including Francis Ford Coppola, Kurt Russell, Yao Ming, Mike Ditka, and more in their book, second book, California Celebrity Vineyards. The book features exclusive interviews, more than 250 color photographs of vineyards along the West Coast from Napa to Los Olivos. As part of the author's two-year quest to find great wine and give readers a peek into the lives of the athletes, actors, and artists who have turned to the art of winemaking. Well, actually, they haven't. They put the money into it. They're not making wines. I don't think any of them really are. I think they just hire the right people and let them do it. There you go. There's a good book if you're into reading those things. Kansas Wines. This was a long article, but I just wanted to hit a couple of highlights on this here. Kansas Wines. We've talked to some Kansas wineries. I've seen Kansas wineries. Hollyfield is a Kansas winery. They're one of our they were one of our guests there on the opening of it. It says Missouri's advantage was a 20-year head start over Kansas, since Kansas continued having prohibition-era laws that prevented them from doing much with wine. And in 1965, Missouri started to do it. Kansas, it wasn't until 1985. The promise was limited the industry's growth as damage to grapes from an herbicide 2,4-D. The herbicide could drift to damaged vines as much as 2 to 4 miles away, and some of it had been traced to as far as 14 miles away. So the industry, really the herbicide was used on crops, and it basically started to kill vines. Damage every year was causing people to lose money, and a lot of growers are starting to find something else and start to use other types of herbicides that wasn't drifting, that was a heavier compound. I hate to just give a name and not give a little bit of information. Where is his name? Greg Shipp, S-H-I-P-E, of Davenport Orchards and Winery in Eudora. And then Michael Meyer of Hollyfield Vineyards and Winery in Basor. There is no AVA in there. There is small ones that go over the border, but there is no AVA in there. The AVA designations for petitions have been passed around, and to date, the TTB has approved 243 AVAs in 25 states, and California by far the most, but Kansas is trying to get a petition for AVAs. So they've been looking at different areas. No active AVA petitions were filled out until recently when Flint Hills submitted one, Flint Hills AVA in Kansas. They're looking at getting that approved. And it's in northeast Kansas, that area up there along Kansas River Valley is the area, which the Kansas River is a small river that runs obviously through Kansas. It meets the Missouri River right at Kansas City. They said it is a small AVA. And they're hoping to get it approved within the next couple years so that Kansas can start having a little bit more of their own identity, which they have not had too much, except on the program All About Wine, who has interviewed them and talked very kindly of them. So that last part was not in the article. That was an add-on by me. Excuse me. So, Kansas, jumping up there, AVAs, trying to get themselves an AVA and a little bit more recognition. Speaking of Kansas and Missouri, my sister, who lives in Missouri, outside of Kansas City, Liberty, Missouri, actually, where the first daylight holdup of a bank was held by Jesse James many years ago. In fact, you can actually still see the bank is still there, but you walk into it and it's a little Jesse James memorial type thing, and they can tell you about Jesse James and all that. But one of the wineries we talked to, and oh, for the life of me, I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of it right now, but one of the wineries we talked to on the program there in Missouri, they picked grapes with them, and they were just picking grapes a couple weeks ago, or last week it was, this last week. They are out there. The winery pays them in bottles of wine when they're bottled in the season. So it's sort of cool way to do it. And people love to get out there and pick the grapes. And my sister says, oh, my gosh, that is hard work, which it actually is. The Yakima Herald, Yakima, Washington, Yakima, I think, maybe. Yakima Herald came out with an article about smoke paint in wine. It's being studied closely by the Washington State University, WSU, And they're saying smoked salmon, smoked briskets are delicious, but smoking wine is far less appetizing. The smoky smell that flooded the wineries in the recent wildfires in Washington and all that got them to start. You know, Washington State University scientists launched the study to see how much exposure needed to cause smoke taint in wines. And we've talked about smoke taint in the past. It's been a subject that I've addressed quite a bit, actually, because of the fires out there. But everyone would like to know if the wildfire nearby or not nearby can cause smoke taint and what the problem is. So a professor, Tom Collins of Washington State University Tri-Cities, who is an assistant professor of viticulture and enology, decided that he would check it out. And he started to check the exposure, stage of the fruit development, wine tasting choices, and see if all those. His research using a backyard smoker in greenhouses of Cabernet and Riesling vines is to sort out all these different factors. He was assisted by students and the the director of the Washington Association of Wine Grape Growers, who is Vicky Charlou or Charlau. Impacts are really widespread. In some cases, they are not even warranted at all. But every fire is different. Every winery is different. And there's not any way to be able to pinpoint exactly what it was that they found. But she did praise Collins for his work and what he's finding. The scientists have already found that the smoky flavor is produced when smoke particles bind with sugar molecules at ripening. Those compounds called glycosides don't smell smoky at first, but when they're broken down in the enzymes in your mouth or when they're released in the wine, you can get that smokiness. They're looking at extracting the smoke from the compounds as one of the reasons for this study. Some of them are very smoky. The information can help winemakers minimize the impacts and look for the compounds and look what the fermentation, all that. A lot of times you don't notice it until they're fermented. I think I covered that on previous shows talking about it. White wines, which are usually not fermented with skins, tend to be less of an issue. It's the red wines that are the most common ones that do have some smoke. During the 2014 wildfire season, the Great Northwest wine area reported that they were worried about smoke taint because it rarely, rarely impacts Washington. But 2014 was a bad year, and so that's what started him on it. They said that if you don't smell it, they figure it's okay, but then winemaker told them that it really gets bad when you get ash in the vineyard and it sets on the canopies and stuff. So Collins hopes his research can find answers to a lot of these ongoing questions about how smoke affects the grapes in the vineyards and the ultimate final product that you end up drinking. No answers yet, but he is in the process of doing this in greenhouses, which is a good place to do it, I think. So good for him. I mentioned that hail hit France. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago about how bad the hailstorms were, or maybe longer than that. I lose track of my times, but maybe longer than that. I mentioned that the hail problem has wiped out a lot of grapes in different areas and caused some major, major problems. The rules allow 80% of crop to be bought from the same appellation as Helen Frost played havoc on it. Okay, in the areas that it did play havoc, the 2016 harvest in Burgundy, Loire, and parts of Languedoc The hail has really played havoc on those areas, and so they can and are allowed to buy grapes from other vineyards in their appellation. So it's not like they can have California grapes shipped in. They can actually do it from there. Winemakers actually are wondering if this policy is workable. The French agriculture minister pledges that he's going to give full support to the producers of this and that he's going to do what he can. The catch is for winemakers lies in finding the grapes from their same appellation. They lost 60-75% of their crop to late spring frost, and most of the neighbors are in the same situation. So how are they going to be able to find enough grapes to spread around the whole area? A lot of the appellations, like Burgundy, lost 50-60% of its potential harvest. So it means that there's really no extra grape supply available so that they can buy and use it. But that they're able to if they can find it. Independent winemakers have grown for themselves, and they, you know, feel that the only way they can do this is tell the customer that they're using other grapes. Some wineries do have some reserve stock that they can dip into, but some producers in the Chablis region are considering using the rule, but no one is willing to tell and talk about it and be quoted on it. So we'll see. It's something that's happens every once in a while. Back in 2004, Missouri had that situation where they got themselves a real late frost, and it really, really did some major damage to their grapes throughout the state, and they were able to get grapes from other states that year because it was they didn't have grapes. The worst hailstorm in living memory in Languedoc region was August the 17th, afternoon of August 17th. They also had catastrophic hail in Chablis, Beaujolais, and Cognac areas. May 13th was devastating hail in the Chablis region. The rough season, rough year over there. The lower frost may cause wine shortages. Burgundy hit by the worst frost since 1981 at the beginning of this year. It's been tough for them. And so they are going to try to find what they can on grapes and what they can do. But, you know, they may not. They may use backup. Who knows? It's all out there. Let's see. What do we got to talk about on this one here? Oh, we already did that one. This is the one. Ah, yes. A couple of things here. Can scientific rigor describe wine terroir? Terroir. We talked about it. It's a word that doesn't have an English equivalent. It's a big French. Their terroir is so important about their wine and all that. Terroir is important to some areas, less so in others. There has been lots and lots of data. Lots and lots of data gathered on terroir. This is wine critic David Schnick speaking at the 11th International Terroir Congress. And he said between dozens of papers that reported results from projects around the globe that seek a better understanding of which grapes are made, and several papers dug into the issue of terroir. It's been so abused as a marketing tool, he says, that lest its walls something in and wall something out is not going to be useful to discuss anything scientifically. There's a wealth of information out there, he says. For example, he's compiled data on 80,892 vineyard blocks in the rural region of Portugal and trying to better understand the characteristics. In North America, Brook University's Cool Climate Oenology and Viticulture Institute is flown drones over vineyards to try to develop what they call an NDVI, a normalized difference vegetation index. Terror. Must put the vines in the middle of the terror. Terror is all about the interaction of a vine in the natural environment. I think the consumer perception of terror is not so big here in the United States, but very important overseas. The abstract nature of terror for most people without some measurable difference. Terror differences give you a century significance in an academic concept with little impact on the market. Again, those who are concerned about it are the ones who are looking for it. He goes on to say he thinks that century diversity is a new synonym for wine quality, and terror is an important part of that diversity. The article goes on. I've read this thing today, and it's some interesting points that they're making, all that. But the bottom line is, he says, cleaning up the idea of terror and applying it, the idea correctly, would help ensure research results were understood correctly. Having a clean concept is at least a way to start. But there is no clean concept on what terror is and what it does and what you're looking for. And it is so diversified anyway that it doesn't, when you say, I've got good terror. Well, that's great and that's wonderful, but different areas may... you understand what I'm saying, I'm sure. I don't have to go on and explain in depth about this, but areas that have different terror will give you a different type of taste, but that is unique in their own terror. So nothing, basically. The science can't describe it yet. This is something I saw, which I thought was interesting. I thought maybe you all might like to hear about this. Let me just talk to you about the article. And I won't go into all of this, but I'm going to hit some highlights, okay? Go for a slightly shinier apple, or you get quickly bummed when the Big Mac in your hand looks nothing like the picture on the commercial. But like it or not, aesthetics factor into consumer judgment as much and often more than substance. We're not monsters. We just said we're very hyper-vigil and in a hyper-commercial world. I mean, if the hamburger doesn't look like it should, we get a little, what's wrong here? Things like this. We the whitening of the teeth and all that stuff. And the same is true in beverage, craft beverages. For example, whiskey. Okay, most of us understand the distillants in whiskey history, and we understand that there's these certain colors, but often the colors in whiskey are corrected with a caramel coloring. Now, it's not going to be something they're going to talk about. It's not going to be something that you're going to put on the label, but it's something that is done. And the same goes for wine. You say, what? Yeah, there's lots of different names out there for it. This particular article is talking about Mega Purple. There's one called Purple 8000. There's another one that's called Red. I don't know. I can't remember. Red something. Red Dye 200 or something. I don't know. But they all sort of different names. Depends on what companies you get it from and where you get it. But there are all sorts of different ones out there. Most of these are a tincture from a grape called the Rubeard, R-U-B-I-R-E-D, Rubeard. Tincture is a French word for a grape that has both red skin and red flesh, which is unusual. But that's why it is so dark. It makes this mega purple. Rubeard grapes are prepared into a kind of wine with a ton of residual sugar, which is usually about 68%. And they're also very rich in color. Mega purple is used to darken wines. And it's very concentrated. It's a mega purple. It's mega or purple 8000 or red 200 or whatever. But these are very, very concentrated. They are very high residual sugars, usually on them too. And they are very good to add color. And don't freak out. You've probably had it over and over again, that deep, dark bottle of Cabernet that you bought for $6, and you're going, oh, wow, look how dark and how wonderful this color is. Probably has coloring added to it. Probably had, you know, this wine texture added to it. Same thing with, you know, your any of your red wines, you're going to get this. A lot of them are a lighter color, and the mega purple will add a little bit more color and also just a hint of more sugar to it. Now, it doesn't take much. This is something you have to think about. Here, now, like I said, speaking of, you might be inclined to think called something called mega purple is only going into cheap wines on the grocery store shelves that come in $14 2-liter bottles, but that's not really the case. The generic fruit-forward softer reds and smaller wineries make more expensive wines supposedly use mega purple too. This is why you don't hear a whole lot of wineries talking about it. It's not something you're going to see on the label. It's not something that is going to be, you know, you walk into a winery and say, do you use mega purple? Do you use this? Do you use that? And they're going to go, huh? What's that? I've never heard of that. And, you know, but, you know, it's, you expect, you know, you get an $11 Australian Syrah, and you look at the color, it's going to be consistently a darker color. And you're going to say, oh, well, this is good. And this is from the fruit, and it is, and it's from the grape, but it's not the Syrah grape. It is from coloring being added to it, mega purple or, you know, purple 8000 or whatever it is. Small portions are used. It doesn't take a lot. It's not like you're going to have, you know, gallons and gallons and gallons of mega purple added to any wines and all that. When you start using it, you're looking at, you know, want to say a 500 gallon tank, you might end up using maybe, you know, 1500 milliliters or something like that, you know, 2000 milliliters. It depends on how dark you want it and how dark it is. And that's not much. I mean, that's really a small amount. Nobody's going to talk about it. Nobody's going to say anything about it. It's not going to be on label. It's not going to hurt you. It's not bad. It's made from grapes. It is just added to make it a little bit darker. And I'll tell you what, that making your wine a little bit darker is much, much better than other things that can be added to make things darker. So, hate to disillusion you, or hate to blow your bubble on some of the wines that you look at the color, but you know, it's done. It's done. I'm not going to say a lot. It's done enough that, you know, you don't know which one is and which one isn't. And again, it's not going to hurt you. Oh, here's something that I thought was really funny. This, you have to get a chuckle from. If I can find it here. Where is it? Oh, there it is. Nope, that's not it. Where is it? It's in this one here. Oh, there we go. California pot growers. We talked about California pot growers think you're going to be taking some business away from the wineries, and they may, who knows, and all that. But the newest thing is that California pot growers want to have a designated appellations, like AVAs, if you will, American Viticulture Areas. Pot growers want to have their own little AVAs, or, well, AMAs, American Marijuana Appellation, I guess, or something. One of them is in the Mendocino County, Mendocino Farmers. And Mendocino's a big, big, big pot-growing region. I was watching an episode of Aerial America on the Smithsonian Channel. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but it shows, picks out a state or a region, and airplanes fly over it and doesn't land, just shows you stuff from the air and gives you the history and stuff. And they were talking California, and they showed Northern California, and they said Mendocino County, and more marijuana buildings up here than any county in the world. And you know, they just flew over and showed these little buildings all over the place. And they said that they try to keep it secret because people from Russia and different Brazil and different places in the world will come in and steal their marijuana. So they try to keep it secret. But, oh, what's this? Oh, I don't want to hear that. There's again. Shut up. I hit you close here. Shut up. No, I don't want loading that. I hate it when it does that. Now come back. I lost my. There it is. Okay. And what's it doing? It's talking again to me. Oh, there it is. There's, I can turn it off. Just shut up here. Okay. Oh, it won't. Why won't you shut up? I'll tell you what. Let's put that on mute there. Let's see if that will do it. There we go. All right. But one of the things, Emerald Triangle of Northern California, an appellation for cannabis. The Emerald Triangle of Northern California. And they're also talking about the Champagne region. Now, I'm sure that they can't name it that because that's a protected name. But they're looking at so far the Mendocino appellation is Mendocino Appellation Project divides the 130-mile coastline into separate northern and southern appellations with 9 inland regions. And some of the regions will mirror wine industry appellations, and others such as Coblo dos Rios and Campeche will be more applicable to cannabis. The final map will be published in December, and the Emerald Cup Outdoor Marijuana Competition is right around the time that they're going to be doing that. Other farmers in the state hope to do the same, but Mendocino is the first that's come up with a map. Is Anderson Valley bud really going to have different characteristics than a bud from Redwood Valley? Ask a Napa winemaker, Tom Wark. They're going to have to make a case for it that it is that much different to be able to show, like wines do. Wines will give you a different taste and flavors and stuff from different appellations. Will marijuana also give you the different distinct flavors and tastes? And if it does, after you smoked it, do you really care? and that's it for this evening. We covered some stuff here and got things taken care of. And let me quickly run through this. I saw this. Do you want to start a brewery? Here's, you know, not always about wine, but here. This is an article out of Beverage Industry Magazine. It is from this month, September 2016. Let me get out of this so I can take care of it. It says, have you ever considered starting your own craft brewery? Okay, there is a few tips you need to know if you're going to start a craft brewery. Number one, location and incentives. Location, location, location. We've all heard that when it comes to real estate. It also applies to breweries and wineries and anything else. Zoning requirements have to be considered you know, your license and all sorts of stuff. So it's not something that you can just, you know, say, oh, I'm going to put a brewery here. Business plan, another thing you need to know. Spend time to prepare a good business plan. It can be beneficial if you want to take a loan, go into a bank or anything. They will want to know what you have planned for the future, because if you don't have a business plan, it's not going to happen. And license. That's the big one. You know, be sure you have your license. Be sure you know what license you need. Be sure you know, and this goes not just brewery. This talk about brewery, but this is a winery too. Be sure you have your license and all of your ducks in a row, as they say. Also insurance, because some of the licenses will not let you get a license unless you show proof insurance. And then also type of equipment you need and the barrels you need and all that other stuff and your significant upfront cost and your bonds and all that. Everything has to be in place before you can go any further. And the types of beer or wine that you want to get, you need to decide on that also. Are you going to just do a couple of them? Are you going to do what you've been making at home for the last 5 years? Are you going to branch out and try to do a bunch of other fancy, neat stuff? This is all things you need to look at when you're going to open up your brewery or winery. And the three-tier system. This is in almost every state. It's still out there. It hasn't died yet. And it's something that you have to be aware of. So if you want to sell it, you're going to have to find a distributor, because the three-tier system doesn't allow you to make it and sell it in your brewery or winery and also ship it unless you have the license. And it's tough to get the license a lot of times. So three-tier system, look at your distribution. The brand, be sure you have that protected, legal entities of the brand. A lot of times you can do your own research, but if you don't, be sure that everything is covered and no microphone detected. Can you still hear me?
I can, yeah.
Oh, my little...
I heard myself.
My little... The thing here, a little Skype thing, said no microphone detected up in the corner. That's why. Huh.
No. Are you fine?
Oh, well. It disappeared. No. Oh, well. And so be sure the brand and everything is legal on that stuff. And if you open a winery, you need to get all that registered. And you also need to get all that approved by TTB. I don't know about breweries. I don't know if they require approval of their labels or not. But wineries do. And then hiring the right people. There's always that, and be sure you have enough money to pay for all the stuff that you need to pay for and payroll taxes and all that, and that can sometimes smack you in the face every month or every quarter or whatever, too. So things to consider if you're going to open up a winery and or a brewery, all that stuff needs to be taken care of up front. So now, there we go. I wanted to throw that out there for anybody who wants to say it. And then if you do open up a winery or a brewery, call me, mm-hmm. thank me, and be on the program.
That's right. We are looking for guests all the time.
We are. All the time. Yes.
Just have some free time available on Thursday evenings, and we will call you. Yeah, we make
That's
the call.
Right.
So you don't even have to call. You don't have to call in. You don't have to worry about anything. It's a free flow type of thing. Ron asks you some questions like, I don't know. But he asked you some questions. I'm going to come up with something. I was trying to come up with something really technical. Like,
Do you use, stainless or do you use
stuff like that?
Oak barrels or
stuff you
do you use clay pots?
I don't know if you can hear that. Are you? I don't know if you can hear that through my microphone, but it is thundering really bad over here.
Yeah, I heard something in the background. I thought maybe you belched or something, but you know that was.
I mute when that happens. I just wanted to get this out real quick. I don't know if we're going to have a show next week on the 29th because you are going to be super busy because Saturday, October 1st, is a huge, unbelievably, and I didn't realize it was this huge until I printed out the information off of the website, but it's the Pasco 2016 Pasco Pet Fest.
Fourth annual.
Well, they call it. It's a program. Yes. Doggy Cakes is hosting Pasco Pet Fest on October the 1st. It's an annual event, the fourth annual event, with an expected attendance, according to the website, of 1,000 to 2,000 people. Could be more. The festival promotes adoptable pets in Pasco County, Florida, and surrounding areas. All of the proceeds will be donated to a local 501c animal rescue known as the Fur Babies Foundation, Inc. Many other rescues will attend at no cost and will have the opportunities to solicit donations and to promote their adoptions and programs. The festival is being held at, guess what, Florida Estates Winery. And I had the, there we go.
Bus people. Yeah.
A little delayed there while I was looking for the button. With vendors, food trucks, raffles, giveaways, adoptable pets, live music, and of course, wine tasting. The event is free and open to the public. Your contribution, definitely, I was going to the as an advertiser, but that's already been done. But can't read this verbatim. But it is October the 1st, 2016, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Florida Estates Winery. I was looking. I printed out the vendor list because I actually have that day off, and I was going to see if I can set up a, you know, something over there and do a live broadcast. But
it's a big event. No, it really is. It's our biggest of the year. Yeah.
It's huge. I'm looking at the list. There's 76 so far that I can tell here. 76 vendor, I guess tables or something on this map.
Yeah.
And Florida State's Winery is just one little tiny part of it, and then the rest is just all the vendors and everything. It's huge.
It's all over.
I didn't realize it was that big. But 76 right now that I'm looking at the map. It's incredible. If you need more information, go to www.pascopetfest.com. All the details are on there. If you're in the area, definitely need to stop by there. And it's going to be huge. So check it out, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday, October the 1st, 2016. That's the first time I saw that kind of map. It's unbelievable.
We are pet friendly all the time, too, by the way. And that's a great day to bring out your dogs or your pets.
There's going to be, besides all of that, there's going to be special things for your pets. Like they said, raffle prizes. There's going to be tickets to special things going on. There's going to be a tent set up just for tickets and things like that. So it's going to be a lot. It's going to be great for your pet as well. There's going to be like a Paws Dog Bakery, the New Barker, Pet Supplies Plus, Raffle Rescue is going to be there. There's going to be all kinds of – I mean, I can't get through all of them. That's 76. But it's going to be
there's
huge.
A
and,
lot.
It really is.
It's our big event.
Yeah. So things to pick up for your pets and a fantastic cause plus for yourself. And it's going to be amazing. So come on out October 1st to Pasco Pet Fest 2016 or 2016, however you want to say it. It's free, open to the public, family friendly, pet friendly. And come on out. We'll see you out there October 1st.
And so the tasting is $15, but half of that goes to the fundraiser. And you get to keep your glass and wine tasting and all that. So that's always a fun thing there too. So,
absolutely. And I'm planning to be there. I took the day off, so I'm like, okay, I gotta go to this.
Good. We'll look forward to that. That's great. Yeah.
I was gonna bring a little table and stuff, but they're pretty much unless I'm in a tree somewhere or just doing it from my car. I think that's
All right, out the back. back door where you've set up before, but then I think usually a food truck sets there, and you know, so
It's okay. It's way busy, but yeah, I see that. So come on out, and we'll see you there Saturday, October 1st.
And we got plenty of parking. You don't have to worry about worrying where you're going to park. We got an enormous field there to park in. And we've also got volunteer kids that run around and help everybody and all that. So, and, you know, all sorts of stuff. You know, it's just comfortable, enjoyable. And so it's a good event. Yeah.
Great time. So we'll see you then. And I'm just saying that now because I'm not sure if you'll be able to have a wine All About Wine next Thursday, but if you'll be busy, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm looking to do it now, but I maybe end up mowing or doing something like that and prep for it.
Right.
So, yeah, a good point, a very good point. We might not.
We may or may not see you on Thursday, the 29th of September. So,
yeah. I never thought about it, but the good possibility I'm going to be busy. Yeah.
So we'll see what we can do.
Well, one thing I want to. One thing is just off the subject a little bit here. Robert Mondavi, his widow from the Mondavi Vineyards in California, she passed away a couple of weeks ago. And I keep forgetting to mention that, but she passed away also. So she has joined her husband. I knew both her and Robert Mondavi, met them many, many years ago when I lived in California. Very special people and very humble people. I mean, they were the patriarchs of one of the main patriarchs of Napa Valley, and that you can never tell because they would sit down and talk to you and everybody just like they were your friends. And I got a chance to meet both of them. It's a loss to Napa and to the wine world. She passed away. I don't have her age up in front of me here, but I think she was something like 96 or something. So let me see if I can find it quickly here. 91. Yeah. Magritte Bivar Mondavi. She was 91. And she, a very nice lady. And the industry will miss her, although she, you know, pretty much been out of it for years. But it's, you know, it's a passing of a very special, very special family. So, just I wanted to bring that up. I forgot about it last week, and I wanted to bring it up this week. So,
all right,
there you go.
Thank you for that update, and we will information, and we will go ahead and close the show this week. We'll try and have one next week on the 29th. Just keep in touch with us on Twitter, probably on Facebook. We'll see if we can keep you updated on those, and. Of course, you know, whenever we post a show, it goes automatically to Twitter. I have not been able to do it on Facebook yet, but it's being posted somewhere. So definitely follow us, and we'll keep you posted on there or right here on the Blog Talk Radio page. So we'll go ahead and close it out for this week. And, you know, if we're not on next week, then don't forget Saturday, October 1st.
Right. Thank 11
a.m.
you.
11
that's
a.m.
That's a good point. I never considered that, and I'm glad you brought it all up this evening because I would have said, oh, we didn't have a chance to mention it. So thank you for that.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, I was looking at the list, and I go, man, this is huge. So be there. We'll see you all.
It's fun.
Next. Yeah, we'll see you. Yeah, it sounds like it. We'll see you all next time on Blog Talk Radio and All About Wine, and have a great week or two, and we'll see you all next
time. Thank you for listening.
One. Yeah, thank you. We'll see you all. Thank you.
Yeah. Bye. See you all next time.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery. Florida State's Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida State's Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@FLEWN.com.
allaboutwine.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.